and welcome. You're watching The Buck Stops Here, and I'm Parkha Dutt. First, the government has eased some more norms. This is the Rabi crop, the season when farmers actually have to sow seeds, and farmers have been asking and imploring the government to ease the burden of demonetization by raising the exemption limit from 25,000 a week, which is what they're currently allowed. The government has responded to that plea today. The government easing restrictions for farmers has said that old currency notes of 500 rupees can be used to buy seeds. The finance minister has also asked banks to make funds more easily available for farmers in this crucial Rabi season, which is a season when, in fact, certain crops and their seeds are actually sown for harvesting later in spring. This is happening on a day when the RBI is also speaking about an extra 60 days for all those who have to repay car and home loans. So day after day, we are seeing different norms, different restrictions being relaxed. But there is no letting up from the opposition. 10 opposition parties have met in Parliament today. As the breakdown and the chaos and the unruly scenes in Parliament continue, we can change to those pictures now. You can see that is, well, it looks like an orderly parliament actually, and not a chaotic parliament. But contrary to those images and the stories that they convey, exactly the opposite was in fact happening. As I said, the opposition has said that it will not allow any work to take place in parliament at all till the Prime Minister comes and speaks. This is not going to happen. However, those are the indications from the government that the concerned ministers will speak and will be responding to the opposition's questions. Is the opposition in fact evading a debate? Because this could be politically advantageous, this demonetization move for the Modi government, contrary to the opposition charges. Well, all of this on a day when the Congress Vice President Rahul Gandhi did another tour of ATM banks and banking lines, talking to passengers in those lines, literally cashing in, some would say, on note bank politics. Now remember, the big fault line in the political debate remains whether the Prime Minister will speak or not. Opposition leaders are now saying if the Prime Minister could address the Coldplay concert, and quote from Bob Dylan, why is he finding it so difficult to come and speak in Parliament? On The Buck Stops Here today, later in the program, Derek O'Brien of the Trinamool Congress will be joining us to answer questions on whether the opposition is in fact a divided house. But let's get started now with our big debate tonight. Is it advantage Modi, or is it a setback, a gamble that could backfire for the Modi government? On the program today, Sambit Patra of the BJP is with us. Manish Tiwari of the Congress is with us, who in fact raised questions around the legality of the demonetization policy. Prashant Bhushan, who's of course a senior advocate as well as a politician, is with us. Tavleen Singh, columnist and author, and Rajiv Chandrasekhar, member of parliament. Sambit, I'll start with you. Let's forget the opposition for a moment. Let's forget what they're trying to cash in on. Let's forget whether the popular opinion is with the Modi government or not. Quite simply, this is Parliament. One should hear the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister should be able to come and answer the questions of the opposition or speak directly to the people. Why is the government indicating that the Prime Minister will not be speaking?
Barkha, this particular question, whether the Parliament would address, whether the Prime Minister would address the Parliament on this particular issue, when will he address? I'm sorry, as a spokesperson of the political party, not of the parliamentary committee, I do not have the privilege of answering this, and I should not answer this as well. The people who form the parliamentary committee, they have the privilege of answering the questions pertaining to parliament. But anyhow, I would answer it from the point of view of the political party, and I firmly believe that in democracy, particularly a parliamentary form of democracy that India envisages, naturally the Council of Ministers are equally important. Why is there a Council of Ministers? The Council of Ministers is there because they have division of labour. There is a finance minister of the country. The finance minister is present every day. The finance minister on various occasions has said that please ask me the questions, please suggest amendments, and I am there to take up all the queries, to answer them to best of my abilities, and to cater to all of your suggestions. But I have not heard, apart from the very first day that we had some amount of sensible debate, yes, right from the second day, we had not a single ounce of debate. All that we see, all that the country is seeing is ruckus. And today, Barkha, I watched the whole day and I would tell you I was really appalled and I was sickened when I saw that the railway minister, Mr. Suresh Prabhu, was in fact shouting to make a comment on the people who had died. And there at the background, there was a ruckus going on.
That's
what is this country?
That's a fair point.
What would be the people?
I think that's a fair question. I don't think you've answered why the Prime Minister is not speaking, but I think it's fair that for you to say, could Parliament not come together when the Railway Minister was speaking on a grievous accident, I think is a very, very fair question. And I will put that to Manish Tiwari. And then I'll come back to you, Samit, on the point of Mr. Modi not speaking. Manish, before we get into the legality and the absence of legality, as you have alleged, I think that's a fair question. The fact of the matter is, the opposition is entitled to say, Mr. Modi, come and speak. But the government is entitled to say, there's been a terrible rail accident. And that's one moment when Parliament should be allowed to function.
Well, Barkha, I entirely agree with you. You know, the railway accident has been a very grievous accident, a very tragic accident. People have died in that accident. And if I understand correctly, the Parliament did pass an obituary resolution condoling those deaths. But the same Bharatiya Janata Party was not prepared to pass an obituary resolution condoling the deaths of 70-odd people who have died standing in lines because of this illegal demonetization. So therefore, while they can cry hoarse and shed crocodile tears about the concern which they have for those unfortunate people who perished in that railway accident, the fact remains, on the same day, in the same parliament, that Bharatiya Janata Party is not prepared to pass a resolution condoling the deaths of those 70 people or 80 people who have died standing in line because of this illegal demonetization. I mean, there could be nothing more insensitive than this.
No, but it's not either or, Manish. I'll put that to Sambit. And I know that there was a debate in Parliament today over obituary references and mourning the lives that have been lost since the demonetization policy was announced. But it's not either or. That doesn't mean you should shout down the railway minister when he's trying to talk about the railway accident, surely, Manish.
Well, I do not know under what circumstances it happened, Barkha. I'm not a part of the House or either of the Houses at this point in time. But be that as it may, the fact is that the railway minister, you know, should have been allowed to make his statement. I completely concede the point. But as I said, I do not understand what the context and circumstances were. But what I do understand is that while we are passing an obituary resolution for those people who perished in that train accident or who died in that train accident, you know, why the reluctance, why the recalcitrance to actually agree to an obituary reference for those people who unfortunately died standing in lines trying to exchange what was legitimately their currency.
Okay, Sambit, I think very quickly, even today, we have seen reports of a death that is alleged to be linked to the demonetization. So, you know, there are these reports that come in every day. Yesterday on my program, I had a family from Bulandshahr who actually, where they say that their unborn baby died because the hospital lost a lot of time in arguing that they could not accept old notes. This was an hospital, part of a chain that is incidentally owned by a central minister. Now, I'm not saying of the minister. I'm just saying private hospitals are exempt from accepting old notes. So there are these things. So yes, Mr. Prabhu should have been allowed to speak. But Manish Tiwari says, why not allow an obituary reference for those who have died in the last few
days? I'll answer this. Barkha, as far as why this obituary was not allowed, first and foremost, I pay my obituary over here. I pay my condolences. We are extremely sensitive. But why on technical grounds it was not allowed was an answer given by the chair itself. And the answer was, number one, obituaries cannot be, by rule of parliament, by rule laid by the Parliament of India, cannot be taken up suo moto. Secondly, as you also pointed out, Barkha, there have been deaths allegedly, you yourself said, allegedly because of demonetization. So what the chair said was, the exact thing was in fact reflected by the chair, saying that how do you determine the number? Who determines the number? Because once we open this, then because maybe tomorrow someone may say, how many people have died because of Manrega? Let's have an obituary. These are technical issues. Okay. So the chair did not allow the obituary.
I want to come back to the larger point of where this is headed, right?
Because Barkha, there are
Manish, just go on between you and Sambit. Let me just I'll come back to you, I promise. Let me just bring in the others. Rajiv, Prashant and Tavleen. Rajiv, I'll start with you. The fact of the matter is that there are many people who may say, all right, bold move. We give marks to the Prime Minister for boldness, but the implementation, the fact that today you've had to say this is the Rabi season, there are farmers, you know, this is when farmers need to buy their seeds, farmers are not being able to pay their labor on the fields, private hospitals who are not forced or ordered to accept old notes, the fact that the 2000 rupee notes initially did not fit the ATM machines, would you concede that the planning or the implementation has been less than desirable?
No, I think what I mean, first of all, I am not anybody to concede because I'm not in the government. But having said that, I think, Barka, we must understand demonetizing 86.4% of the existing currency was never going to be simple and smooth and painless. I mean, let's just assume that. And that is why on the 8th night, the Prime Minister did say it is going to be inconvenient for people and he asked people to bear with it. But having said that, I think the fact is that the government has gone into uncharted territory. The nation has never done this scale of demonetization before. And things are being done on the fly. I think we are grappling with issues as they come forth.
Okay.
It is probably a good case that you make that all of the consequences were not thought out. But really, to be realistic and to be fair to the government, Barka, it's not always easy to figure out all of the downstream consequences of something that is being done for the first time. This is truly uncharted territory. So, I mean, you can call it not enough planning, or you can also say you are sailing into the unknown and dealing with the unknown as you came across them.
So in a sense, you're saying that there's a certain inevitability that you learn as you go along. Prashant Bhushan, is that a fair argument that because these are uncharted waters, somewhere you have to find your way as you navigate them?
No, I don't think that's a fair answer at all. That I think this is a issue which could have been and should have been thought through properly. And it is absolutely clear, absolutely abundantly clear that it was not only not thought through, but in fact the government just went about it in a totally casual, ad hoc manner. Two things. First, if it had been thought through that 86% of the currency is going to go out of circulation, you had to have the replacement currency in place or plans to have the replacement currency in place in time so that people who are holding these, legitimately holding 500 and 1000 rupee notes, which most of the people were, could have exchanged those notes for the new notes and could have gone about their ordinary business.
Right.
But unfortunately, because of the lack of availability of the currency in the banks, in the ATMs, etc., people have been totally left at sea.
Yeah.
Secondly, you see, the ATMs should have been calibrated for the new notes in advance.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, even that was not done. Thirdly, the government should have thought about the fact that more than 50 or about 50% of the people in this country don't have bank accounts.
Yes.
And therefore, they are only dependent. They don't have ATMs. They don't have any kind of cards. They don't have bank accounts. And therefore, they are totally dependent on a cash economy, especially farmers in rural areas, etc.
Yeah.
Those people have been left completely at sea.
Yeah.
They are, I mean, quite apart from the direct deaths caused by people who are standing in line or people who are not being able to get treatment in the hospital. But you will see a very much larger number of indirect deaths caused by malnutrition due to loss of livelihood, due to loss of business, due to loss of access to food, etc., which is going to happen in the days to come.
So I'm saying,
and thirdly, this is not a strike against corruption or black money.
Okay,
if they wanted to strike against corruption or black money, there were many things which could have been easily done to really carry out a surgical strike against those who were known to have been holding black money, those kind of instruments like participatory notes, which are known to be vehicles and instruments for black money.
So let me,
unfortunately, none of that was done.
Let me take that to Sambit. I'm seeing his hand go up. Sambit, just a comment from Tavleen and I'll come to you. And I want Manish also to come in because he's made this contentious claim that this is not even legal. The fact is it's happened before in 1978. In fact, Mr. Shanti Bhushan was in government, if my memory serves me right, at that point. But Tavleen, go ahead. How do you see what's unfolding so far?
Well, you know, I don't want to go over what everybody else has said over and over again on every debate. I personally am of the view that if he's going to do economic reforms, it shouldn't have started here. Because I actually don't believe that black money is our problem in the first place. It is tax departments that are corrupt. It's corruption in officialdom, that, you know, that the political parties are corrupt. A lot of business men keep black money just to finance elections.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think he's sort of gone about it the wrong way. And the other thing that I want to say is that, you know, this, all the people talking about farmers' distress are people who haven't been in rural areas. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of support, actually, for what he's doing, because those poor people really believe that he's doing something for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of the rural economy is run on credit.
Yeah.
So at the moment, there's no crisis. By next week, if, you know, there isn't something done to make more money available, then there will be the problem of paying workers.
That's already happening, Tavleen. A number of workers I've met have actually said that the farmers were paying them in old notes. But today those restrictions have been eased. I just want to make that clear that today there was an announcement that those restrictions have been eased. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you see, it's certainly, you know, it looks as though they didn't think fully what they were doing. And, you know, I mean, if now that he's done this, the Prime Minister doesn't go ahead with further reforms, like reforming his very corrupt tax department.
Okay.
Like, you know, making it easier for people to do business in this country.
So you
then, you know, I mean, then what he's done becomes useless.
So you and Prashant Bhushan come from very, or from exactly opposite places on saying there were other things to attack. But Sambit, go ahead.
Give me some time, Barkha, because there are a lot of questions that need to be answered over here. First, when Prashant ji says that it was not a well thought over process and much more mind should have been applied to this whole process, I would say no. If such a huge, I would say it's a game changer and mother of all reforms, if such a huge step was taken, and I believe in this century, no other
what
democracy would have
changing?
Taken such a huge leap.
Tavleen is asking
it,
what game is it changing? You said it's a game changer. She says what game is it changing?
I'll come to it. You have to give me the proportionate time and answer all these questions. But let me first quell the thirst of Mr. Prashant Bhushan, who has raised some questions. Then I'll come to Tavleen ji's answer.
Okay,
question.
Come on.
Number one, it was a well thought over procedure. Otherwise, the step would not have naturally been taken. Do you think that the Prime Minister and the people who were responsible for this big change would not have thought over? When Mr. Prashant Bhushan says that, a thought over means all these ATMs would have been recalibrated previously. All the notes should have been printed in the mint previously. Does not that mean losing the secrecy itself? If the 3 lakhs ATM in the country were to be recalibrated, then the NDTV's headlines would have been back then. Recalibrations of headlines taking place. Something big in offing.
Okay.
Something big in... Just, Barkha, there were 10 questions. Please give me at least 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Then the headlines would have been different.
Yeah.
People would have unhoarded their black money. Secondly, when you say that malnutrition, unemployment would follow in the day to come and there would be more obituaries, I would be safe. Going by the standards in the parliament should be standing whole day in the session because for the 70 last years, there has been malnutrition in this country and employment in this country because of faulty policy by the UPA and the Congress
Sambit,
government.
Sambit, let me interject now. I'll give you another chance to respond to your points because Tavleen is wanting to say something to you and then I want to go to Rajiv and Manish and Prashant in that order. Tavleen, go ahead.
Yeah. Sambit, the Prime Minister, when he did the Jan Dhan Yojana, should have asked, I mean, it's a simple question. The finance minister could have checked how long, you can even Google it. How long does it take to print new notes to replace old ones? It seems as though even that most basic question has not been asked.
Sambit, quick response there and then Rajiv and Manish.
Yes. See, I carry the headlines of today's newspaper, Times of India. Time to transport cash to banks cut from 21 to 6 days. Because the government has pressed the helicopters, the Air Indias, and etc., all the forces that is in display of the government to see to it, all this crash crunch that has been talked about does not exist.
Okay, let me get reactions.
I'm talking about the printing of
new notes. Do you think the government
is not taking the steps? Tavleen, I suppose the SPI chief, I just want to come in on Tavleen's point. The SPI chief, I'm actually answering one of the points raised by her. The SPI chief argues, Tavleen, that you don't have to replace cash with cash. That is her answer when I asked her the same question. That you're assuming that you have to replace cash with cash.
So what are you going to replace it with? Gold coins?
She says digital. That's her answer. That you have to encourage more people to use mobile wallets, to use, you know, checks. I'm just giving you her answer.
Yeah, but you know that
this is what she said. This is what she said. But
you can't. Yeah. If you don't earn 25,000 rupees a month, you don't get a credit card in India.
Okay.
So how do you replace that with digital?
Let's bring in Rajiv. Rajiv, there is a perception, and there are many people who say the Prime Minister has done a good thing, we'll suffer the hardship. There are others who say that it's really the small, you know, cash economy workers, the daily wage laborers, the domestic help, the rickshaw puller, the labor on the fields, right, Rajiv? There is a class divide in this conversation that we cannot ignore sitting here in Delhi in our studios.
No, and I think, Barkha, and, you know, I have written a piece that's coming out tomorrow, and you'll, I kind of subscribe to the same point that you are, that while there was a clear understanding that this would be disruptive and this would cause pain, there's a disproportionate amount of pain that is being taken on by the informal sector. And the informal sector in India is 90% of all of those employed. They are the ones who are unbanked, underbanked, have very little access to formal credit, and really are depending on cash and currency for their livelihoods. So the sucking out of this 14.8 crores of currency may have been okay and in a sense mildly disruptive to those who have banks and credit cards, but has been really painful and really hard on those who really rely on cash for their day-to-day subsistence.
Yeah.
And I think that is where the government should focus on increasing and hastening liquidity to the informal sector.
Yes.
And if necessary, even increasing the window where the 500,000 rupee notes
can
are
be
used for slightly longer in receipted transactions.
And I think they've started doing that with allowing farmers now to do that with seeds in a season where the farmers really need that. Manish, you have contentiously questioned the legality. I want to understand that, because this is not the first time. And Prashant will remember this from his own father. This is not the first time that demonetization has happened. But yes, in 1978, when, again, if memory serves me right, Manmohan Singh was a secretary in the finance ministry. Mr. Bhushan was minister in the government. You did see demonetization, but you saw an ordinance then. Why do you then question legality? This has happened before in this country.
Well, Barkha, let me raise four public policy questions.
Yeah.
You've seen two demonetizations earlier,
yeah.
One in 1946 and the second one in 1978.
Yeah.
Both demonetizations happened by ordinance / legislation. Mm. Section 26A of the RBI Act demonetized currency before a certain date in 1946. And in 1978, you have a standalone demonetization act. Under 26(2) of the RBI Act, you cannot demonetize by executive action. It is illegal. Number two, under Section 24(2) of the Reserve Bank of India Act, it specifies the denominations of currencies to be introduced. 2,000 rupees is not mentioned as a denomination. Till the time you do not legislate to include 2,000 rupees in that denomination or in 24(1), you cannot issue 2,000 rupee notes. They are per se illegal. Number three, except for declaring financial emergency, under what rule of law have you imposed these arbitrary limits on withdrawals? Go back to the 8th November notification which demonetized.
Yeah.
It says demonetization takes place under 26(2).
Yeah.
Well, 26(2) does not allow demonetization in the first place and definitely does not allow you to impose these arbitrary limits on withdrawals.
So what are you saying?
Short
this
of invoking financial emergency
are you arguing that
under
for
Article 360 of the Constitution.
Are you arguing that for this to be legal?
What I'm saying is what the Prime Minister has done, the government has done, is completely illegal, because currency in my hands is my property. It's legal tender that I use to transact
goods and services. Let me get
you
reactions.
You cannot take away my property under Article 300A without legislation.
Now,
so therefore, this entire demonetization per se is illegal, Barkha.
But Prashant Bhushan, the matter is already in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has not put a stay on the demonetization. Prashant, first, Sambit, I'm coming to you. Just give me half a second. Prashant, go ahead.
Yeah, but it's still hearing it.
Prashant.
Well... Yeah, Nee, I don't think Manish is right to the extent that under the RBI Act, under Section 26(2), the government does have the right to demonetize by a gazette notification. Now, I have not specifically examined whether they can introduce the 2,000 rupee notes also. Probably they can under the RBI 26(2) of the RBI Act. However, what they, in prima facie, what they cannot do is to impose arbitrary restrictions on withdrawals, which they are doing day after day from time to time.
Yeah.
That does not seem to have any backing or any authority of law. That seems to be done totally illegally. Prima facie, it appears to be totally illegal. But you see, there are more serious problems than that. It was said by Sambit that the time taken to transport currency has been reduced. What's the use of that when you don't have the currency to replace in the first place? According to the government's own statistics, all the printing presses to print notes will take 5 years if they were to replace this currency with 100 rupee notes. They would take 10 months if they were to replace, or 1 year if they were to replace this currency with 500 rupee notes. And it would still take at least 2.5 months or 3 months, 3 months to replace if they were exclusively printing 2,000 rupee notes.
Okay.
So clearly, there isn't enough currency to go by. Half, as everybody has pointed out, at least half the economy, half the people in the economy run entirely on cash.
Yeah.
Those people have been left totally high and dry. And this argument that this is a big strike, this is a game changer against corruption, etc. Arre, you had full information about the people who are holding black money. I had myself sent specific documented complaints about the Ambanis. The DRI has come out with a report that there is over invoicing by Adani in the import of coal in tens of thousands of crores. You have not done any surgical strike against them. Then you have the Sahara and the Birla payoff papers which were recovered by the Income Tax Department, which show payments of hundreds of crores to these politicians, etc. No surgical strike was made against
papers,
these persons,
Prashant,
who were
to
shown
Supreme
to have
court. You have taken, in fact, those papers, which of course, you know, the BJP and other parties, because even the Congress politicians are named in those papers. The court will clearly decide that matter.
Yes.
But do you stand by the authenticity of those documents? Because I mean, we do have to say that we do not know if these papers are authentic.
No, they were recovered. That they were recovered by the Income Tax Department from Sahara and Birla, of that there is no doubt at all. No doubt at all. Because they are signed by the assessing officer of the Income Tax, they are signed by one officer of Sahara, and they are signed by two witnesses. Each paper which was recovered has been signed. So far as the Birla documents were concerned, they were recovered from the computer of their CEO, who was questioned about it, and he admitted that yes, he had written in his computer that CM Gujarat was paid 25 crores. Now, he was asked about it. He said Gujarat CM means Gujarat alkalis and chemicals.
Yeah. Let Samit take that. Samit Patra, please go ahead.
Barkha, most of them have spoken against it, and there are many panelists. So please allow this ATM machine, that is my ATM machine, to dispense a bit more. Number one, first, when you say that this is all illegal, that an ordinance or a kind of discussion should have been brought to the floor of the parliament, and thereafter it should have been brought into the fore, I can well understand the concerns of Mr. Manish Tiwari, the spokesperson of Congress. They only wanted that Robert Vadra and Mr. Rahul Gandhi and Sonia Gandhi should have been informed in advance so that they could have taken care of the 5,000 crore Herald money and umpteen number of bag full of money of Mr.
Well, that's
Robert
absolutely
Vadra. Well
a very, very below the belt insinuation.
I did not.
Do not try and deflect from the...
Barkha, this is absolutely illegal. This is absolutely biased, and don't allow a spokesperson to speak.
If I start making allegations,
if you don't allow a spokesperson to speak, don't call the Bharatiya Janata Party.
Okay,
have your agenda run over here.
This will not end.
1 minute, you can both speak. You can both speak. One at a time. 1 minute.
Have all your agendas run over here. Don't call the BJP. We have no problem.
No, you have an argument with Manish. Don't take it out of the anchor. One minute, Manish. Everybody stop shouting, please. First, everybody stop shouting. Calm down. We're having the same conversation. What has happened to all of you?
No, Barkha.
One minute, Sambit. Firstly, your argument with Manish cannot be made into an attack on the television anchor, right? So you argue it out with Manish. Don't attack the messenger. That's your fight between you and Manish.
I will tell you now.
Please don't drag, don't shoot the messenger, which is very convenient to do. Fight your own battles with the Congress.
When Prashant Bhushan says that 25 crore was paid to Modi, 30 crore was paid to Modi, that does not become a below the belt hit. But when I point out the facts, remember, both the mother and the son, they're out on bail. Accused number one and accused number two, they're out on bail for what? For praying in a temple? No, for having governed this 5,000 crore rupees.
Well, your
remember,
president of the Bharatiya Janata Party was charged with murder in a fake encounter. So therefore,
don't
if you
shout,
want to go down
don't
that
shout
road,
when
your
honor.
President was charged with a
corrupt,
fake encounter.
Corrupt
and
people should not shout.
Him,
yes,
Sambit
you make
Patra.
That point.
So therefore,
I did not interject. I did not
Manish, let him finish his point and then you can respond. I'll tell you what. I'll do this one by one. I'll bring mics down and I will allow people to speak one at a time. All right, Sambit, you have one particular closing comment. I'm taking closing comments. Now, we have gone from a range of allegations on this program. Mr. Bhushan has made allegations on the alleged Birla Sahara payoffs. Sambit Patra has made allegations against Sonia Gandhi and Rahul Gandhi. Manish Tiwari has made allegations against Amit Shah. And we have forgotten in the middle of all this that the fountainhead of corruption is our politics and the way it is funded. And what we really need to do is to end cash donations to political parties, all political parties, and stop this rule that allows no disclosures below 20,000 rupees. All right, Sambit, your comment. 20 seconds to everybody, equal time. We start with you.
No, Barkha.
Closing comments are out of time.
You are out of time. You gave all the times to others anyhow.
Go ahead and make your point. Just a second.
See, young people are sitting in this channel. All of you are educated. All of us, all these years have been discussing. When would we become Singapore? When would we have an economy like America? When would India change? And today, when a person, Mr. Narendra Modi, whose popularity has not gone down, he doesn't have to do all these gimmicks just in order to gain some popularity.
Okay.
Still, he takes a chance. Why does he take a chance? To change your and my country. And yet, here we have corrupt politicians, those who are out on bail, not ready to buy this change. For these corrupt politicians, should my country suffer?
My country is not going to suffer because
Sonia, Robert, and Rahul are going to suffer. Let them suffer.
Okay. Now you've made your point. Now, Manish, your 20 seconds.
You know, Barkha, without going into the stupid diatribe, the fact that the Prime Minister
that is a stupid diatribe. When you hit Mr. Narendra Modi, that is an intelligent one.
I'm out of time. Manish, make your point.
Well, you know, this conceptual correlation which the Prime Minister has made between cash that is equivalent to black economy is fundamentally flawed in a country where 65% of the people depend upon agriculture, where out of 50 million people, only 350 million people have bank accounts, and where in the bulk of rural India, 99% of the transactions are done in cash between the farmer and the artisan and the small consumer and the shopkeeper. With one stroke, the Prime Minister of India has sunk the Indian economy.
Now we have two very extreme views. I'm hoping for some balance in the middle. I'm going to ask the rest of the panel is literally for 15 seconds each. Prashant Bhushan.
Well, as you said, rightly said, Barkha, one of the main sources of black money is the donations received by political parties, which are out of account cash donations for the bulk, at least for the major political parties. The BJP receives more than 90% of its donations through this out-of-account cash donations worth thousands of crores.
Right.
It's the largest single recipient of these out-of-account donations.
Right.
But instead of reforming that, They have now sought to retrospectively amend the Foreign Contribution Regulation Act, which prohibits foreign contributions to be received by political parties. Why? Because the BJP and the Congress were held guilty of receiving foreign contributions, and therefore they want to retrospectively do away with that.
Tavleen, your last
word. The third thing is about RTI and the political parties.
They are all refusing to come under it, and that is a point of hypocrisy as well. Tavleen.
No political party in this country fights elections with white money, not even the saintly Aam Aadmi Party. Let's acknowledge that that is the reality, and that the Prime Minister perhaps meant to clean all this up. I believe that he could have gone about it with more subtlety than he has and with more planning than he has.
Rajiv, wrap this up for us.
Yeah, Barka, I just want to say this, and I'm responding to Prashant and the rest of the panelists. Any form of corruption that you want to deal with in India, whether it's corporate corruption, political funding, all of it, the heart of it is the issue of the cash economy, the black cash economy. And the government's efforts to essentially compress that, reduce that, isolate that, is at the heart of every other downstream fight that the government will undertake or need to undertake. So I support it, but I completely agree that the informal sector needs more sympathy and a lot more empathy in the coming days to put an end to the suffering that the informal sector is going through.
We will leave it there on this volatile debate. Thank you to our panel.